Hey everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Guess what we're going to talk about today? Food! Okay, I'm here with my guest, Josh Balk, who is
Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the United States. He's led the country's transformational legislative campaigns that criminalize factory farming practices, including spearheading the historic California Proposition 12 ballot measure, the world's strongest law for farm animals. Since then, he's waged successful campaigns passing similar laws in Oregon, Washington, Michigan, and Colorado. Josh also leads negotiations with the world's largest corporations to enact animal farm welfare policies, including with McDonald's, Walmart, Kroger, and Denny's. Prior to coming to HSUS, he worked as an undercover investigator exposing cruelties within factory farms and slaughterhouses. He's also a co-founder of Eat Just, a company that makes the Just Egg product.
Josh, welcome to It's All About Food.
It is great to be on. So good to talk to you, Karen.
So let me first find out a little bit about Josh, okay, and Josh's history on the food continuum.
Let's do it. You know, Karen, I grew up probably like most young boys in Pennsylvania, raised by a single dad with a brother, and we were fed pretty much a diet of heavy on meat, not too much vegetables or fruits, and that was how I ate for my childhood. And you know what? I think my dad, and I know my dad did the best that he could, certainly. Sure. At the time, but we've learned a lot since then. And so I've certainly evolved since I was a kid in Pennsylvania and trying to eat healthier and healthier since then.
And what motivated you?
You know, numerous reasons why I wanted to shift to eat plant-based foods. I became vegetarian when I was about 17, and it had to do with the treatment of animals in factory farms. As you know, Karen, and your listeners, you likely know, most animals raised in food production are treated pretty poorly. They're confined in these warehouses. Many are confined in cages where they can barely move an inch. They're genetically manipulated to grow so big so fast they can barely move an inch by the time they're sent to slaughter. And so the treatment of animals really hurt my heart. And I grew up with dogs, and you know, I care about animals like anybody else. And so that kind of turned me to eat more plant-based foods and become vegetarian. And then I started learning more about other benefits for my health and also for the issues related to the environment, workers, and so many others. So that's when I really started, when I was about 17.
Terrific. And I recently read that your dad, who is 80, has adopted a plant-based diet.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Yeah.
You know, 80 years old, I give him so much credit. I mean, can you imagine eating a certain way for 79 years and then thinking, you know what, I can change. Yeah. And he is as big of an advocate of plant-based as there is right now. I mean, he's bragging about it to his friends. He's calling me after doctor's visits saying that the doctors are asking, what have you done? You've never been healthier.
Wow.
Like the blood tests are coming back. And they have been just vastly improved. And so he's shocking the world right now, Karen, with his plant-based diet. Not only that he did it, but also the wonderful benefits that he's getting from it too.
Well, that's got to feel good, because I know as a vegan activist myself, I've helped a lot of people move to eating more plants or all plants. And my brother and sister are vegan, but my parents, my dad died 3 years ago, and he wasn't going to change an inch. Although I did get him to drink soy milk instead of cow's milk, and that helped him a bit. And he ate more vegetables, I think, as a result. And my mom has always been open to it, but it's hard for her socially. And now she's just into her own habits. So they've never changed, but I know how good it feels to know that you've had that impact. And I love when children teach parents. Parents obviously teach children, but it's nice when it goes all around.
You know, it is nice. My dad actually was a teacher for much of his life. And so not only has he taught me, he's taught literally thousands of people history. Not only was it somewhere taught, you know, students about history, he's taught me so many life lessons. And he was involved in the civil rights movement when he was younger. He worked a lot on social justice issues. So I learned a lot from him about, you know, devoting time to make the world a better place, especially those who are vulnerable. And that helped shape me. So finally, I've given something back to him. and it's been when he's 80 years old to eat healthier and being in a better position than he otherwise would be. Hey, I'm impressed you got some family members. My brother is a bit challenging to get him. I'm doing my best. And when we get Chinese to order tofu, so that's a good step for him. And
exactly.
I'm hoping for more soon.
Well, I think this is an inspiring story for people to know that it is never too late to change. The benefits will always be there. Take Dr. Benjamin Spock, for example. He moved to a plant-based diet and wrote the 7th edition of the baby book, promoting parents not to give their babies dairy. A lot of the medical profession called him a quack when he did that. He was revered for decades and all of a sudden he became a quack. The point is he felt a lot better and he lived a lot longer than expected because of it. So there's just a lot of inspiration there. So here you are. Tell us what the Farm Animal Protection Group does at the Humane Society.
We're trying to change the world for animals. We're trying to tackle factory farming in what we see as the most effective way possible. One is that we want to abolish the worst practices in factory farming, the confinement of egg-laying chickens inside cages. You know, imagine, you know, a cage the size of your home microwave and sticking 8 chickens in there. That's where most eggs come from. And we want to abolish those cages. We want to abolish gestation crates. These are cages where mama pigs are put in where they can't even turn around. They're there for 4 years, unable even to turn around. You know, these are animals who are inquisitive, smart, social beings, just like our dogs or cats at home. And yet they're treated in a way that if done to dogs or cats, we'd be arrested for cruelty in animals. Yet these are normal practices in factory farming. So we're trying to eliminate the worst practices in factory farming. We do it by passing legislation. We do it by getting corporate policies, like getting food companies to switch to cage-free as a step in the right direction. And we've been very successful over the past several years. The egg industry has been roughly 1-2% cage-free. Now they're about 30% cage-free. Mm-hmm. And the pork industry is about 30% gestation crate free. And so we've been moving in a good direction to reduce the suffering of these animals. Simultaneously, just like you believe, Karen, we think people should eat more plant-based foods and we want to help make it easy. And so we have a division on our team made up of professional chefs, made up of registered dietitians and nutritionists and you know, effective advocates, working with the largest food service companies in the world to shift their menus instead of 1% plant-based to 50% plant-based. So we're talking about companies like Compass Group, Aramark, Sodexo, that run the dining operations at colleges, universities, K-12 schools, hospitals, even prisons and military bases, to have plant-based not only just be an option, forget about an option, that's so like 10 years ago. We want plant-based to be the most delicious offerings they have. And our key to that is that our standard has to be that if one does not care about their health, if one does not care about animals or the environment, all they care about is choosing the dish that tastes the best. We want our plant-based dish to be that dish. That is the standard we have, and that's why we think we're making so much headway.
Right. Well, I don't think that's hard to do.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And you know what? Now easier than ever. People are used to eating like the chicken and fish and like that's so old school. I mean, let's have some new, innovative, colorful, delicious plant-based meals and not just like the typical stuff that just seems boring. And so I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, we perhaps are surprising some folks how good our dishes are, but they shouldn't be so surprised. You know, people are tired of the old way of eating. Let's move on to the next generation of eating. You know, let's progress a bit. And that's what we've brought to the food service industry. And Karen, I would just add to this is that to show impact, you know, one of these companies is an example, like Compass Group, they run the dining operations at more than 10,000 of these colleges, universities, and other type of institutions. So that's high impact. You know, we think that, you know, yes, we want to get one person at a time to eat more plant-based foods like I do with my dad, but let's do more. And if we can get tens of thousands of operations to shift their menus to be at least half plant-based, that's impact right there.
Access is very important. And it's kind of a, oh, I hate to use this expression, chicken and egg kind of thing.
It but, is though, you're right.
Yeah, so people who want the food will be happy to have access to it and make them more likely to eat plant-based more often. And then those who don't know anything about it might see something or see something that looks good and try it, so.
Oh, I agree with you completely. And, you know, for us, we just got to get it out there. And I mean, you know, I feel like, and I'm not sure how you feel about this, but I feel like most people are probably good people out there. Like most people probably don't want to get all these diseases linked to the massive meat consumption that Americans have. Most people probably don't want to harm animals to destroy our environment. So let's just work on a baseline that most people are good. So let's make it easy for everyday good people to do the right thing. And the way we make it easy is by making it darn delicious. And so I feel like we are achieving it. I feel like plant-based is more mainstream than ever before. I know that when I went vegetarian, you know, my meal used to be a block of tofu in a microwave and put some ketchup on it. And now, like, it's, you know, and it's horrible. Trust me. You know what? That shows you how passionate I was about helping animals that I would eat that. But now, I mean, it's a piece of cake. Are you kidding me? I mean, go to any major grocery store. They have delicious plant-based meat products that hey, as making a transition, if you still like the taste and texture of meat, hey, there's Impossible Foods, there's Beyond Meat, there's Gardein. You know, there are so many products out there that are phenomenally delicious that help us, you know, take steps in the right direction without giving up anything. In fact, you're adding something by eating really good food. And you know, I know, Karen, you're a believer in health. You know, that helps us probably take more steps eating whole foods too. You know, like more fruits, vegetables in the whole form. And so I kind of look at those plant-based meats as kind of like gateway products to eating a bit healthier. Sure. And they're out there easier than ever for everyday people across the country to take these good steps.
I always have this idealistic thought of this, or this idealistic picture. And I know it's not possible, but I just don't understand why people don't get it. Why they don't think like me, basically. When you learn about the horrors that are going on in factory farms, when you learn about what we're doing to animals to put them on our plates for a momentary bit of time where we're feeding ourselves, and how horrible it is, I just don't understand why people don't say no. But they don't. And you have a very positive outlook where you believe that most people are good.
You know, I feel that. I feel that too, Karen. I got to tell you that, you know, I worked undercover in a slaughterhouse before. I worked in factory farms before. And so I didn't just see like a YouTube video. Like I actually worked in these facilities. And I have come to the belief that if most people out there have ever been in a slaughterhouse, they probably would think, you know what, this does not reflect my values here. Like I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. I don't want to see these poor animals go through this. And I think so much of it is just out of sight, out of mind for most people. And it's not really their fault when the factory farming industry is designed to be out of people's mind. I mean, these animals are locked behind the closed doors of factory farms. They're trying to pass laws called ag gag laws that make it illegal to film what's going on inside or take photographs or document what's going on inside. Like that says something when the meat industry is trying to pass laws so people don't know what's going on inside these factory farms. Like if you're proud of what you're doing, you open up the doors, you welcome people in. Like that's when you're proud. When you make it a crime for anyone to know what's going on, that should show two things. One, their business model is based of keeping folks out of step and out of mind of what's happening. And they know that if people know the truth, they are gonna change. They are certainly gonna change how they choose their food. And so what is bad about factory farming is what's good about it. What's bad about it is when people know the truth, they don't think it's so good. So that's bad, that how bad it is, but it's good that people, when they know the truth, typically don't think it's a good thing going on.
I agree. They don't think it's a good thing, but many people don't act. And that's what's frustrating to me. But also, those who work within the factory farm, the workers, most of them don't have a choice. They don't have any other employment opportunities, and it's some way to feed their family. So they're watching this horror day in and day out and numbing themselves to what's happening. So it's a very complicated system.
I agree with you that this is not a worker issue, as in the workers are doing something wrong. This is a system issue. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I worked undercover, you know, I was working with folks who I frankly became friends with when I was there. They were good people. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They would take another job if there was a different job in their community, because they certainly didn't like what they were seeing.
Yeah.
At the same time, let's change the system without passing blame on people. And I think that, you know, we're starting to move in that direction. Even meat companies now are starting to invest in plant-based meats. And I don't think they're really doing it because of the goodness of their heart. I think they're doing it because they're seeing the trajectory of what people are choosing when they go to grocery stores and restaurants. So people don't have to believe me as being too optimistic that change is happening. Look at the meat industry. They agree with me. They see that this shift is happening to plant-based, and that's why they're diversifying. So I look to them as hope, honestly, for a better future.
So you are the co-founder of the company that's now called Eat Just. I try to remember all the names this company has had. So I talked to the other Josh when Hampton Creek Foods was, Hampton Creek Foods and the product was Beyond Egg.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
You're right. I founded Eat Just with my best friend, also named Josh. And you're right to call him the other Josh. I adore him, and I'm so grateful for everything about him, not only as a dear friend of mine, but also what he's done for animals. And so, you know, Eat Just is thriving. They're doing such a great job. I mean, to ever think that there is now a mainstream plant-based product related to eggs in mainstream grocery stores. You know, we're not talking about like my local co-op. Like, we're talking about this product being sold, you know, at Walmart and Safeway and Albertsons and Kroger's. And the fact that, you know, according to Eat Just data, more than 90% of the people who buy it eat meat. So this isn't even appealing just to vegans like myself. Like, this is appealing to everybody. And that's how we can make change, is by appealing to everybody. You know, we need a big tent to change the world for animals and for so many other issues. And the more that companies like Eat Just and others can appeal to everyday consumers that, hey, you are welcome to this movement here. If you do Meatless Monday, hey, you're on the team. If you do vegan before 6, excellent. If you want to try a plant-based egg, go for it. Like, the more that we welcome everybody, I think the more effective our approach can be. And Eat Just has done a phenomenal job making delicious products and also making sure that folks who are not vegan know, hey, this is for you guys, even more so than the crazy vegans like founder Josh and other Josh.
So tell me about the successes that you've had with the Eat Just product.
Well, I can tell you is that, you know, when I founded the company with other Josh, you know, the first product was just with ingredients for food manufacturers to use to replace their conventional eggs, which is the industry term for cage eggs. And we started thinking, you know, like, I think a bigger impact can be made by actually producing products under the company's own name. So the first product was a mayo product called Just Mayo. But the gold standard to where the company was always headed, though, was a plant-based egg from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, Karen, it's so hard to do. And, you know, it has taken a lot of scientists a lot of experts in fields that I have no understanding of how they do what they do, but they finally found a path using mung beans as the base to create a product that everyday egg eaters can buy and think, you know, this is actually really delicious. And so what, for me, what I think, you know, was kind of the moment when I knew that this egg product was a winner, wasn't when natural food stores picked it up. It wasn't when Whole Foods picked it up. And I'm very grateful for Whole Foods and what they do overall for plant-based products. But it was when Kroger started picking it up. Because that's when I started to think, oh my gosh, like we're talking about, you know, people out there who eat the standard American diet, people out there probably like, you know, my brother or your mom, who go out and buy foods that maybe you and I wouldn't buy, mm-hmm. and they go out shopping every week for it. And all of a sudden, not in the vegan section, but in the egg section, they can buy plant-based eggs. That's when I felt like this product, you know, really made it, and I felt like we could have a really big impact.
I think I was reading on your Facebook page that you posted an article about the third largest user of eggs in fast food or something in China is now using Eat Just.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's the third largest fast food chain in China has replaced its egg sandwiches with Just Egg. And to be crystal clear, we're not saying that Just Egg is an option. It's saying that that is the only option. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is hard to fathom. It's almost not believable. But can you imagine going into a fast food chain and looking up and the only option for breakfast for the egg sandwiches are all the plant-based eggs? And know how they viewed it though? They viewed it as an upgrade. And they say, hey, yeah, we have a lot of competitors out there in the fast food world. You want an upgraded breakfast? You come to us because we got this plant-based egg as the upgraded product. And it's going well. It's thriving out there. And you know, Asia is such a critical part of the world for a whole host of reasons. And one of it has to do with, you know, factory farming is huge out there. Unfortunately, we as Americans have invented this system, and then it is, you know, launched elsewhere. But you know what? If we can be a cause of a problem, we can be a solution to a problem too. And that's why I'm thrilled that in Asia, this has become such a hit.
Well, I thought it was a genius idea when I first heard about it to create a plant egg that could replace egg products in industrial foods because there are so many of them. And I don't want to make a judgment here, but the people that eat industrial foods, most of them don't know what's in their food, don't care what's in their food, or maybe look for foods that are affordable and just go for the best price. There are lots of different reasons. And so the beautiful thing about this is for those people who don't know or don't care or don't have the means to know or care, this is a better choice. It's cruelty-free and it's healthier. It may not be the best choice, but for those that aren't there yet, this is a perfect thing. And for the businesses, it saves them a lot of money.
You know, plant-based does save businesses a lot of money. And, you know, I believe that most people who work at these food companies, like, I don't think they like the idea that animals are suffering in their supply chain. I don't think they went to business school being thrilled with the concept of, gosh, I can't wait to work at a food company where animals are going to be tortured to make my products. Like, I can't imagine people are like that. And so I think you're right, is that when given a chance, if a product can be successful, and that's the key though, be successful for a grocery store, for a fast food chain, for a manufacturer, if it can be successful and not come with the baggage that factory farm animal products come with, I think these companies would go for it, and they are. It's not even a hypothesis. It's actually mm-hmm. happening. And I also just want to say too that I agree with you is that so much of what I think that we should do as a collective group of people who are trying, you know, to change the world for the better is not have to depend on every single person to try to make the best decision. Every single decision has to be made every single day. That's a lot to put on people. I mean, people are busy. You know, they're going to work. They're trying to raise family, or and they're trying to get through COVID, and to put these big ethical quandaries on their shoulders is just a lot to do. And so that's why I firmly believe we got to change the systems. And by having plant-based in the mainstream parts of grocery stores, that's changing a system. By at least abolishing the worst practices in factory farming, that's changing a system. And so these systematic changes will have the biggest impact while also helping people take the steps that you and I both feel are decisions that people can make to make themselves healthier and perhaps are more ethically aligned with values they probably already have to begin with.
It's an exciting time and the momentum is growing. I just want to take a moment to thank the young Josh and all the activists from 20, 30, 40 plus years ago and more, who really did the groundwork, the grassroots work to get us where we are today. Because Eat Just is a great company with great products, but I don't think it would have made it 20 years ago. We just weren't there yet.
You know, I think it is underestimated the type of impact the animal protection and the plant-based movement has had on shifting the world, even when you look at these corporations. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at Eat Just, I mean, it's founded by two people who come from the heart of trying to change the world. If you look at the other companies, you know, like Impossible and Beyond, these are companies founded by founders who want to change the world. You know, like this didn't come in a vacuum. The issues had to be raised for people to be motivated to want to change the world. Some people are doing things like I'm doing at the Humane Society of the United States, waging these campaigns. And that's great. I'm cheering for my team. I'm cheering for other organizations doing the same thing. Change also happens via capitalistic measures, like creating companies that do good. And however change happens, I'm cheering for it. I'm rooting for it. But the baseline of so much of that change is the inherent value of what am I going to do to make things better? And that spawned from a movement over decades, raising the concern for animals, raising the very concept that animal products are a leading cause of greenhouse gas emissions. It came from doctors, nutritionists talking about the need to eat more plant-based food. It came from people like you, Karen, who are spreading the word to as many people as possible. That is the catapult that has moved so much of this plant-based movement forward, even to this day.
Cheers. Amen.
Amen.
I'll drink to that as I raise my lemon water, my hot lemon water.
Oh, very good. You get some vitamin C in there. Nice. Yeah.
We're in COVID times. And how has that impacted your work at all?
It has, I believe, in ways that were interesting for me to discover. Because when COVID hit, I mean, the first reaction is the same I'm sure everyone had, which is confusion, fear, hope that family and friends aren't going to be affected, at least hopefully don't get not just affected, but actually infected. And when you start becoming, you know, used to this new norm that we're living in, you kind of just get back to work and you focus on, hey, how do we make this change that we're hoping to do? And we haven't slowed down at all. In fact, we've actually gone faster than ever to help animals. You know, in the middle of COVID last year, we passed a law in Colorado to ban the confinement of egg-laying chickens in cages and ensure all eggs sold in Colorado are cage-free. That was in the middle of COVID we passed this law. In fact, you would be proud to hear this. The governor signed the bill into law, and then to celebrate, he gave out vegan cupcakes because he was so happy about this new law to help chickens. So we have not slowed down there. We've gotten more corporations to follow through with their animal welfare commitments, like going cage-free on their eggs. And the food service role, plant-based, I mean, we're at a higher level now than any time, not only in U.S. history, probably world history, working with these food service companies to shift their menus to plant-based. We've gotten several companies to publicly commit to having half their menus to be plant-based. And this is all in the middle of COVID. And I think a lot of it is because people are starting to understand the connection between how animals are raised and zoonotic disease. You know, if you look at the United Nations, they issued a report a few months back analyzing the top risks we as humans face in terms of future pandemics. And the top one and two reasons and risks had to do with raising animals and food production. It wasn't like top 100, top 200, one and two. Mm-hmm. One had to do with the intensive confinement systems of factory farming that are breeding grounds of disease that makes, you know, one animal gets sick, they all get sick. And because there's so many animals in one warehouse, the mutations with the disease occur more easily. That's one of the problems. The other problem has to do with the amount of meat that we eat, because that means there are more of these factory farms, more of these animals. And it destroys more forests, by the way, where so many of these diseases are frankly confined in the wilderness that no one can come out. And then we're knocking down these, you know, these trees for land to create crops to feed the farm animals. And that creates a horrible cycle of diseases coming out, more farm animals inside these factory farms, at least more zoonotic disease. So I say this to tell you is that because of the eyes being opened about the problems of factory farming as they relate to zoonotic disease like COVID-19, we're seeing food companies move faster now than we even saw before. So we're not slowing down. We're going faster than ever. And I feel a lot of hope, not only for this year, but for the future, for more progress to come.
I always like to hear some positive spins out of our experience with this pandemic, but you weren't really surprised that this happened, were you? Being in the middle of it, you could never imagine what it's going to be like, but you know Dr. Michael Greger. You know the book that he wrote about bird flu and was warning all of us about the zoonotic pandemic that was going to happen.
You're exactly right, is that for years, Dr. Michael Greger and other experts in public health have warned us about the issues related to zoonotic disease. I mean, there have been avian flu outbreaks in the United States. Like, this isn't some far out issue that goes on in Chinese wet markets. I mean, we've had the largest avian flu outbreak in US history was 2015. You know, dozens of millions of chickens, you know, died and were killed related to avian influenza. It's horrible. Fortunately, it didn't take the mutated leap to be highly contagious to humans, but that was only by luck. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was avian influenza in the middle of COVID-19 in North and South Carolina. And I mean, that was you know, less than a year ago. There, we had a swine flu outbreak in the United States. Like, this is all linked to animals.
Yeah. Any one of them could be the next COVID-22.
Exactly right. It could just, I mean, there are deviations of avian influenza in Asia that were more deadly than COVID-19. And fortunately, they didn't become as contagious. So it is a shame what we do to animals. It is, you know, in my mind, immoral how we treat animals. At the same time, we're harming ourselves as well. And COVID-19, you know, is an indicator of we should be really paying attention to what we're doing and make changes.
It's wonderful that food service companies are getting interested in plant-based foods, and then their customers also have to be interested in buying the products that they're supplying. So how does that work? Are they seeing that there's a demand, or are they making offerings? Which came first?
You know what? Which came first? Both came first. So there is an increased demand for plant-based, and that's certainly a very good thing. You know, especially in K-12, colleges, universities, like this generation of consumers certainly want to consume more plant-based foods for the very reasons that we've talked about. You know, simultaneously, by having more delicious offerings, it is the way that we can get everyday people to incorporate these foods into their diet, even if they weren't kind of thinking about it when they walked into the cafeteria to start with. And so in my mind, though, we really just need to have delicious food. Like, we really do. It's kind of like the idea about Tesla. You know, Elon Musk's model for Tesla was this. It was like, okay, like, he wanted to create cars that were the best for the environment, but he believed that they also have to be the best cars. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we want food that's best for the environment and animals or health, but it has to be the best, most delicious food as well. That is, I think, how change happens in the real world. Like, I don't think we're going to get everybody to watch Dr. Michael Greger videos, which I hope everyone does, by the way, but I don't think it's going to happen. Like, I don't think we're going to get everybody to watch YouTube videos of slaughterhouses and factory farms. So if we can just accept the reality that we have by knowing we're not going to get everybody to do those things, then let's just win out just by being the best. And that's why I feel like our program at these food service companies is so successful, is because it's frankly the best food. And we don't even need to make these ethical arguments if people are choosing the food just because they happen to be the most delicious, most beautiful food out there.
Are you working with political leaders? And we have a new administration. Thank you. And I'm hoping to see some positive change from all that we already are. For a long time, last 4+ years, we've been talking about this mistrust we have in the government and all these things that are happening, all these climate regulations have been turned around, things that have been happening that are bad for the earth and the environment. But for decades, the government has not been a place that we could trust when it comes to the food system. Dr. T. Colin Campbell has written about all the panels that he sat on and all the things that he tried to promote, and the food pyramid that went to the plate and the things that the government recommends. There's been a lot of lobbying. There's been a lot of lies. It hasn't been a place of trust, even with politicians that we like. So what do we have to look forward to there?
I see good things on the horizon. So already, the Biden administration has canceled out plans from the Trump administration related to the line speeds of chickens in slaughterhouses. The Trump administration basically gave carte blanche to poultry producers to kill chickens as fast as they really wanted. It's horrible for the animals. Because the faster the line speeds, the worse treatment. It's also terrible for workers who are going through, a forced speed up of the lines. And it's bad for public health because you put in workers right next to each other in these slaughterhouses. There's no social distancing. They're inches away from each other, especially when the line speeds are going so fast. And so the Biden administration has already reversed the Trump administration's carte blanche ruling to allow poultry producers to go faster. That's a good thing. We have a big agenda to work with the Biden administration on. One includes providing more research into plant-based proteins. There's so much research that has gone into clean energy, and that's great. There should be research that goes into clean energy. At the same time, there should be more research that goes into plant proteins. Bill Gates said that more than 90% of plant proteins haven't even been explored for human consumption yet. And yet this is a way to really address climate change, is by changing our food system. So why focus so much on clean energy, which is great, mm-hmm. but not basically at all when it comes to food that is better for climate, when their food system impacts climate change much more? So that is an area of focus that we're going to be working with the Biden administration on, as well as with Congress. We also are working with the administration to drop lawsuits that the previous administration has filed to try to overturn animal protection laws. Mm. Proposition 12 is a ballot measure that passed in California in 2018, creating the strongest law for farm animals. It's that banned the caging of egg-laying chickens, mother pigs, and baby veal calves, and it banned the sale of eggs, pork, and veal from caged animals, won by overwhelming majority of votes in California. Who wasn't happy, Karen, was the meat industry. They weren't so thrilled about it. So they fought a lawsuit to try to overturn it, and the Trump administration joined the lawsuit. So just because there's a new administration doesn't mean the previous administration's lawsuit just drops. Like, the Biden administration has to actively withdraw support for the lawsuit. So we're working with them to do that. So that's just a taste of what we hope to do with the Biden administration, but it certainly is looking dramatically better than the previous administration when it comes to animals.
There's a lot of vegans out there in the world and plant-based eaters who have a lot of opinions. I'm one of them.
I am too.
And I don't have the answer as to how we're going to get the world to a better place. I think it takes a lot of people and a lot of different approaches. But there is this debate about animal protection and the abolition of animal slaughter. And some will say that what the Humane Society is doing doesn't go far enough. How do you feel about that? Obviously, you like what you're doing at the Humane Society, but you feel like it's the right approach.
I certainly feel like it's the right approach. And if folks want to wage campaigns to pass stronger laws, then go out and try it. And good luck. I hope they're successful. We have wage campaigns to pass the strongest laws, not just in the United States, but in the world. Animal protection groups around the world look to our legislative campaigns and mirror what they're trying to do with what we've accomplished here. So we've passed laws for egg-laying hens in Massachusetts, California, Oregon, Washington, Michigan, Colorado. We have many states this year that we're working in to pass similar laws to ban the caging. You know, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Hawaii. So we have not only the strongest laws for farm animals ever passed in the world, but we also have the most aggressive legislative campaign for farm animals the country has ever seen, and probably the world as well. For us, I look at animal agribusiness and how they feel. And I can tell you that if you look at the lawsuits from the meat industry and their apocalyptic claims of what we're doing to the industry, I think that one would probably think that we're having pretty big impact on the way animals are being raised. For our focus in terms of raising animals, in terms of changing how animals are raised, pardon me, is that we want them to have a vastly better life. And we can just be honest about that. Like, are these animals in cage-free conditions having the same type of life as animals on a farm sanctuary, as an example? Of course not. Of course not. You know, I wish every animal in the world was treated, you know, as if, you know, we would treat our dog in our home. I mean, wouldn't that be a wonderful place if animals were just loved like our animals in our homes? I think we would all think that would be just a tremendous place to live in. At the same time, it's not happening right now. And so how about we vastly make their lives better, like getting them out of cages? For chickens, at least get them in these cage-free barns where, by our laws that we've passed, they have to have perching areas, dust bathing areas, scratching areas, areas to lay their eggs. Those are good steps. Those are good steps that they can't do when they're confined in a barren wire cage where they can't even spread their wings. I mean, so I think that if others have ideas on how to move things faster, go for it, please. And I'll be the first one rooting for you. And if you have ideas on how we can be more effective, let me know. We certainly are more effective now than we were 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 10 years ago. I hope we're more effective 2 years from now, 4 years from now. So we can constantly get better. At the same time, I'm very proud of the impact that we've already made for, you know, at least tens of millions of animals. And overall, you know, number of chickens who are not in cages now is close to 100 million who otherwise would be in cages. So we're talking about more than 100 million animals just in this industry alone who we've affected to have a much better life. And we're going to keep on fighting to make sure that literally billions of animals have a better life.
That's the best answer. If you're complaining about something, if you don't like it, change it.
You know what? What I've learned is that campaigns are just made up of people. Mm-hmm. You know, just it's not an. I'm very proud of the work the Humane Society of the United States has done. At the same time, Humane Society of the United States is made up of everyday people who are caring, who want to go out there and fight and make a difference. And you know, the most important part of an organization is the people at any organization. And so, if you have ideas on how you can do things better, listen, you can start local. You know, work with local restaurants to add more plant-based. Like, you don't even have to be part of an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just work with your local grocery stores to add plant-based items into the meat section. So people who buy meat now can notice that there's plant-based options too. Anyone can do that. Literally anyone can go into a grocery store and ask for that to happen. So you know, the good thing, you know, about Karen is that you can, every single individual can go out and do something. And it's all about actually trying. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote that I really like that I'm going to butcher a little bit, but in essence is that we will never do enough, but try anyway. And that's how I feel. And I don't think I'll ever do enough, but I'm going to try anyway.
Beautiful. So before I let you go, anything else you want to tell us about the farm animal protection part of the Humane Society? Any campaigns you want us to know about? Anything else you want us to know about? Now is the moment.
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Karen. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. If folks want to check out our organization, just go to humanesociety.org. It's super simple, humanesociety.org. Check out what we're doing. You can also follow me on Twitter. I keep folks updated on our campaigns. Easy. It's easy to find me. It's just Josh Balk. You can find me super easy. And, you know, just join our work. Just follow what we do. And if you think we're doing good work, support us. If you feel like others are doing good work, support them too. But overall, listen, we're in this together, friends. We all got to do our part if we're going to change the world for the animals. And I'm excited to make the difference that I think we all can achieve together.
Amen. Josh Balk, thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. It was a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you, Karen.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye.
And that finishes up my interview with Josh Balk, the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the United States. And to wrap up this program, we have Gary DeMattei.
Hi, Karen. Hey, wow, Gary. What a great interview.
Thank you, Gary.
Josh is a hero of mine, and I don't even know him.
Yeah, anybody who goes undercover,
anybody,
right?
Who goes undercover.
In slaughterhouses, I don't know how you can do that.
I mean, the guy is just, he's now my new jam.
So anybody who is a vegan and really feels the pain of the animals that are in factory farms and goes undercover, I just don't know how you do that. That takes a tremendous actor.
What a tremendous interview this was, just to bring Josh to all of us. So thank you for getting that.
Well, you know what? The thing that I got out of it was we need to put more healthy, delicious food in people's mouths. And that's one of the best forms of activism we could do. So he's doing it, having fast food companies and institutional food companies use plant versions of
eggs
and dairy, right?
Right.
And
if people don't care about what they're eating, then, and they're going to eat that stuff anyway, then might as well be plant-based,
might as
right?
well be plant-based. And if you can make it more delicious, which I think is easy, then it's a win.
Yes.
And that's what we do here at Responsible Eating and Living. We make...
We do.
And healthy, you know, delicious food that's vegan, but it's also really healthy.
We do. And if we don't like the way animals are being treated, do something about it, as Josh just said during that interview. And so we did. We started Responsible Eating and Living, our nonprofit. And
yes.
Here we are, bringing people like Josh to folks who probably wouldn't have known who Josh was.
There's so many different things that can be done and need to be done, and no one individual can do it all.
Right.
So pick something that you like to do.
Exactly. If you don't like the way animals are being treated, then, as Josh just said, do something about
it. Do something about it. Start your own campaign or do whatever is within your skill set to help make a difference.
It matters. It seems like a lot of us like to sit back and just criticize without doing anything. And that's a lot of that's been going on. And
it happens on social media.
Yes.
There's a lot of people feel like they have more freedom to be rude.
Exactly.
Freedom to be rude. And a lot of people complain about restaurants and, restaurants are mostly closed right now or they're just getting by. But even before the pandemic, it's harder now. But before the pandemic, running a restaurant is hard. Complaining about a restaurant is
easy. Totally easy. So if you think you can do better,
do it.
Go ahead and start a restaurant.
Yeah, just do it.
And if you don't like the way a restaurant is treating you, then you don't have to go back. But you might want to check if you're in a bad mood that day. Maybe you were just a little hungry and a little crabby. And if so, you should go to our website because, wow, have we been making some really delicious food.
Thank you, Gary. I've been really motivated this week.
You have really made some healthy, delicious food that doesn't taste healthy, but it's delicious.
Yeah, we did some decadent stuff. Yeah, can we talk about that?
Really wasn't decadent at all.
Yeah, I've been on a mission, as you all know, to make comfort food that doesn't have anything bad in it.
Right.
And I've been perfecting, I think, one of our pancake recipes, which we call the late night corn pancake recipe, because I made it up one late night when we wanted pancakes.
When we used to be able to go out to the theater and then we came home late from seeing a play, and we both said, I want pancakes. Or actually, I said that. And you said, okay, let's have some pancakes.
Right. So originally, this recipe was made with a corn flour, cornmeal, and all-purpose gluten-free flour. And now I make it with polenta, organic polenta, and rolled oats that I grind up into a nice flour.
And you grind your own oats?
I grind my own oats. Okay, that's old news. And then I add a little baking powder, not too much. It has water in it, and then I make a batter like that. Then I fold into it
aquafaba.
Have we ever made an aquafaba song yet? No.
Is it faba or fava?
That's a good question. Because
I think it's fava.
It's, no, it's aquafaba.
Faba?
Faba with a B.
Aquafaba.
Aquafaba. The aquafaba, when whipped into a frenzy so that it looks like egg whites, you fold that in and it makes the pancake really nice and fluffy. So it makes a light, delicious
souffle-like, crepe-like, wonderful pancake.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled with it because it doesn't have starch.
Right.
Any of those starch powders like cornstarch or potato starch or tapioca starch.
Or egg replacer.
Or egg replacer with cellulose. Those products have helped me through the decades.
Yes.
But I don't need them anymore.
This is the stuff you used to drain the beans from and put down the sink. And now you take that and whip it up and it becomes this wonderful.
It's magic. Now, we don't use it that often, but occasionally it's a nice product to use.
The other recipe that you made?
Was for Pi Day, which was a couple of days ago.
3.14.
And duh, I just figured out that March 14th, 314.
I can't believe you
didn't
know that.
3.14. I didn't remember.
Subconsciously,
I didn't know
you knew it.
Perhaps. I was going to make a peach pie. We have frozen peaches, but I thought we had ripe pears. You brought that up. So I made a pear pie and remember me going nuts over the pie crust that I made based on Ellen Ecker Ogden's new book, The New Heirloom Garden, and I made the caramelized leek tart a few weeks ago.
I do remember that.
So I wanted to try that pie crust again because it was so great, and I used it. And it's official. It's my favorite pie crust. It's my favorite gluten-free vegan pie crust, and the secret ingredient in it is yogurt. It's genius.
Cashew yogurt.
We use our cashew yogurt.
Right.
Now, I can't say that it'll work with all plant-based yogurts. I assume it will.
Sure.
The original recipe used dairy yogurt. It works with our cashew yogurt.
Right.
So it should work with all yogurts.
Yes, it was delicious.
But I made a pear pie or a pear tart. But I called it a pear pie because it was pie day.
And it was in a pie dish. It wasn't in a tart pan.
And it was in a pie dish.
So it's officially a pie.
It's official.
Right. You can't call it a tart unless it's in a tart pan. Sorry.
And what's the difference, Gary?
Well, a tart pan is a lot thinner. It's about an inch thick. And a pie pan is about 2 inches.
The side.
The sides,
the
right.
The sides. The pie, right. Pie pan is deeper.
Right.
And the tart pan is shallower.
Right.
Yeah.
Shallower, and it just looks fancier than a pie.
And the tart pan, not all of them, but some of them, the bottom is separated from the side.
Right.
So you can remove the sides and then just see the lovely crust on the outside.
Right, right. It comes out of
the
beautiful. Pan very easily. You wouldn't want to take a pie out of the pan, but you would want to take the tart out of the pan. So they make that very easy for you when you buy a tart pan with a removable bottom.
And I love them. They're fun and they're beautiful. In this tart, which is a pie.
Right. This pear tart that you made a pear pie for Pie Day.
At the bottom, I used a little bit of our apricot butter. Who's ever made our apricot butter?
Raise your hand.
Raise your hand. This is a staple at the Responsible Eating and Living headquarters. We take a pound of dried organic
apricots, which have nothing in them but Turkish
apricots.
And we cook them in
3 cups of water.
Thank you, Gary. 3 cups of water. They get soft.
You simmer them for 20 minutes and they rehydrate into these big, plump, gorgeous apricots that they once were. And then you put them in your blender and blend it up all together.
That's apricot butter. And we always have either apricot butter or date paste in the refrigerator.
Right.
To add to recipes to sweeten.
Exactly.
So I put a little of this at the bottom of the pie dough and then layered the pear slices on top.
And baked it.
That's it.
That's all you did.
That was it.
No sugar.
No sugar, just pears, apricot butter, which was just apricots. And then the pie crust, which was just, everything is just here, but just organic rolled oats, organic millet, that's uncooked, the grain, and garbanzo bean flour, organic, of course.
And you grind all that, right? You grind the millet.
Grind them in the Vitamix.
You grind the millet, you grind the, you don't have to grind the garbanzo beans because you have that
already. It's already flour. I could take garbanzo beans and make flour out of them. I haven't gotten that crazy yet. They're a little harder to grind.
Yeah, they would really kind of trash your blender too.
That's what was in the crust. I will confess there's a little organic oil in this crust, 4 tablespoons.
But the next time you make it, you're going to try it without the oil.
I just might.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And see if that works.
It should.
Because you're using cashew yogurt, so there's a fat.
There's
right
fat
there.
In there. Stay tuned, folks.
Yeah, we're going to try that. And then it'll be completely.
And then it'll be just so clean.
SOS, right?
It'll be SOS free.
Right.
Sugar, oil, and salt free.
It's delicious.
And there you have it.
Okay,
that
was fun.
We're out of time.
All right, see you next time.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for being with us today. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Josh Balk, and I hope you've enjoyed our discussion of delicious food, as we like to do so much here. Gary, thanks for joining me.
Karen, it was a pleasure, as always.
Yes, everybody,
have a delicious week.